So in the shock and smackdown of the resurgence of COVID, mostly due to the Delta variant, I'll confess to you that I have been less optimistic than I've felt in quite a few months. With weather events caused by climate change worldwide, the collapse of American defenses in Afghanistan, rising anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish violence and pogrom, a new blood libel in the form of QAnon, civil society deteriorating to a point where I fear for the collapse of democracy and certainly for the possibility of low-scale, non-sectional civil war, probably in the similar vein to Yugoslavia in the 90s. I am sad. I am worried. I am a bit Cassandra right now. And I want to confess that to you to be honest about where I am, but also pragmatic about what we need to do. And I'll talk more about that in the holidays. But today I want to offer a recipe for good cheer, a recipe for joy that endures beyond circumstances, a recipe to feel God's love and gratitude for God's world and success in merely existing and thriving despite challenge. This week in the Parsha, God offers us so many wonderful blessings and even some wonderful praises that we are part of an Am Segula, a treasured people, an Am Kadosh, a sanctified, a sacred and holy and set aside people, and that God will pour out to us the Otzrot HaTov, storehouses, treasuries of bounty and goodness. And there is, as quite often in our Parshiot, a choice between blessing and curse. And in so many ways, at least 95% of the choice is ours. It's not about God's capricious will. It's about our ability to strive for blessing, our ability to seek out what is good in life. There is this horrible chance offered in chapter 28, verses 66 to 67. I believe I was showing you 67, that I find almost heartbreaking. Tachat asher lo avadta et Adonai Elohecha b'simcha v'tov levav merov kol. Because you did not serve God, your God, with joy and with goodness in heart among all the good things, you will then serve foreign peoples in hunger and thirst, naked and lacking. That's actually verses 47 and 48. But it's echoed in the verses I showed you, verses 66 and 67, that life becomes precarious, tender, hung on a slender thread, and we fear day and night, not believing, not trusting, not having faith in our own lives. In the morning, we might say, if only it were evening, and in the evening, if only it were morning. The intimation to me is that anxiety and depression and despair are things that are more contained within us than external factors, and that they are not to minimize the tragedies of mental illness and the difficulties of maintaining mental health without Prozac, or to quote one of my favorite stand-up comedians, whatever it takes to get you across the bridge without stopping your car. But there is a choice in perspective, and we do have an opportunity in these difficult times. I want to be really candid that these are difficult times, among the most difficult I've faced in world history, in the history that I've grown up with a sensibility, candidly, that Jewish lives and the lives of many minorities are cheap in a way that I think has not been experienced in my generation, perhaps in my parents' generation. So life is precarious. Life does hang on a thin and slender thread, on a balance. And it would be tempting, it is tempting, watching COVID spread and the tension, the explosive tension in the air among neighbors, that it gets expressed over mask mandates. But really, I think deeper than that is just the deep pain, grief, and frustration of this extended period of difficulty we're living through. It's understandable. I think perhaps why I'm sharing with you my own crisis of faith is because it's normal. It's totally believable and understandable. People have quit careers and marriages over it. Suicide rates, God forbid, have gone up. So there's an understandable undercurrent of pain in our society. So we need to tend to ourselves. We need to be alert to our own self-care and our own harmony and shleimut, shalom, completeness, welfare. There is a way to ha'amin b'chayecha, to believe in one's own life, to have faith again. And they are, I think, counterintuitively, a lot of small steps. That the possibility of being joyful, and not just in some sort of hedonistic, drunken way, but in real deep, self-inhering joy, self-love, self-compassion, compassion for one's neighbors, are a lot of small steps that are hinted at throughout the parsha. So I think the first is staying playful. I wish I had a visual aid, but this week I had to get retainers to help rebuild my jaw from TMJ and apnea. They're ridiculous. It's deeply embarrassing to have them on. I feel like I'm 17 again. But on the other hand, for most of my adult life, I've wished I was 17 again, so I guess I get a little of that. And I think if we can take ourselves less seriously, we can get through a lot. People have the ability to be self-deprecating, have a big advantage. I can tell you that from a lot of eulogies. And to remain playful, to hold on to the playfulness, the creativity, and the curiosity, the intense, unquenchable curiosity of youth is a big project, part of what our parsha says. So when it says joy and gladness, serving God in joy and gladness, the Talmud has a couple of suggestions about what that means. So what is the service of God performed with joy and gladness of heart? You must say that is song. Being creative, holding on to our joy and delight. And if you can't sing, sing louder. I adore it when people who can't sing just sing obscenely loudly. And if you don't want to sing, if you'd rather make art or dance or make theater or write a poem, that's a kind of song. Our tradition recognizes that for sure. And then the other piece, one of my favorite little stories that's only marginally connected to this week's parsha, is that Rabbi Baroka meets Elijah on the way. There are a lot of mythic stories about meeting Elijah on the way among our sages' stories and jokes of the Talmud. And they're sitting in a marketplace, kind of gossiping almost. And Elijah looks across at some people in the marketplace and he notes to Rabbi Baroka, these two folks, they have a share in the world to come. So Rabbi Baroka, being curious, walks up to them and he says, you know, why might it be? And he maybe asks them a few small talk questions. And he says, what do you do for a living? And they replied, we're jesters. When we see people depressed, we cheer them up. And we see people fighting, we try to make peace between them. That there is in our tradition, as in apocryphally in Islam, a sense that laughter is God-given. And laughter is redemptive, honestly, just as art and song are redemptive in the darkest hours. And that people, even in the Warsaw Ghetto, made art and song. And people, our ancestors 100 years ago in the difficulties of the Pale of Settlement, made incredible Yiddish theater and incredible music. That we can, I forget who said this, I'll look it up for you after Shabbat, said we can make music, it's Tzuck Perlman, with the life we have left. But the other thing our tradition would challenge us is not to be frivolous, and it's a tension. Right? Arts making isn't necessarily frivolous, but delight and joy when taken to the extreme of happiness and mirth, I guess would be the word they'd use, is a kind of frivolity and not a respect, not an awe for God. So in the Mishneh Torah, Maimonides' opus of Jewish law and tradition, he says that service ought be with joy, and one cannot serve God through merrymaking, lightheadedness, or drunkenness, which was the view of the Stoics as well, Seneca and the Stoics, that there is joy in the world, but it's not a kind of hedonistic joy. Though Ecclesiastes suggestive could be also. And the word used in the parasha in chapter 28 as well is li'ira, which yira is a kind of awe and majesty and fear. I had a teacher who created this, what's called an egg corn, a mistaken word that sounds at least good enough to be a real word. And she used to talk about to reverence, that the verb in her mind was reverence, which is a noun, and I've never heard as an effective verb. But in this one case, I really like her egg corn, that what God is asking of us, what Torah suggests to us, is to have reverence for all of things around us, that nature and food and love and humankind and family and charity and learning are all kinds of things we revere. And not a bottle, not gambling, not frivolous dancing at a nightclub, but real joy and delight, creativity and passion and appreciation matter a lot. And also striving, I mean, an advantage of a difficult time, a sheltered time, a sheltering in place kind of time, we've come up with this a lot in the mindfulness practices, it's an opportunity to seek out one's vision for oneself, to clarify what it is we seek, as the angel asked Joseph. And I think the first thing we should all be looking for is a kind of authenticity and integrity. The Parsha says, Baruch atah ba'ir uvaruch atah v'sadeh, may you be blessed in the city as you are blessed in the field. And one of our traditions, citing one of our midrashim, says there are people whose behavior and comportment at home is different to that at shul. The synagogue is both literally far from their home and figuratively far from their home. It doesn't radiate into their lives. And as Maimonides says about rabbis, that authenticity is inauthenticity, disintegrity is the worst kind of curse. Although, if I recall correctly, Henny Youngman said that being genuine is the most important thing. If you can fake it, you've got it made. But I truly believe that the quest of life, the quest towards self-awareness, is a quest for authenticity, a quest for understanding who we truly are at our core, and allowing that to radiate outward in only the best possible ways. And with that yirah, that reverence, with service, with delight and creativity, with authenticity, may we find gratitude for simple and small moments and the still small touch of God in our lives. The Parsha mostly begins with the story of the first fruits, preparation for what probably looked like Shavuot, although it's not explicitly stated, of bringing your first fruits or bringing the earliest parts of your crop to the priests in Jerusalem. How it was actually accomplished in practical terms, we don't know. But the Akedah, which I believe is a medieval source, says the inyan, the essence of the first fruit command, is to bring you into gratitude for, quote, God, your God, gave it to you. This is not mine, I did not make it, but God loves me, the world seems to love me more than I can understand, and to quote Jeff Tweedy in his recent book about creativity, I have a shameful amount of gratitude. That's a good thing to strive for, to have a shameful amount of gratitude. To wish that this single moment, wherever you are, will never end. And you can have gratitude for really simple things. You can have gratitude just for waking up, just for having a belt, just for having shoes, just for having a healthy meal, just for financial security, health and safety of one's loved ones. One of the curses in the parasha that's got a very interesting contrast to another parasha is that if you haven't consummated your house, your vineyard, or your marriage, others will steal it from you. But about 2 weeks ago, we read of the person who hasn't consummated their house, vineyard, or marriage going home before battle. And Ecclesiastes would suggest this too, that those simple things of home, family, marital life, loved ones, cats, dogs, vineyards, tomato plants, are all that really matters. It occurred to me when I think of people who strive after resume success, there's no prize at the end of this race. And the only prizes, the only cherishing, the only rewards are internal. So enjoy every moment. And as Montaigne said, may death find you planting your cabbages, unafraid of death, and even less concerned about the future of your cabbages.